How is digital technology changing the way Iowa students learn? What happens when textbooks are tossed for laptops and tablets? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, as many of our kids careen back into the classrooms, we go back to school. We'll get an update on the digital revolution in teaching. Then in the second half hour, we'll speak with several experts about how bullying can be prevented in Iowa schools and communities, including a former victim of bullying who now studies how to prevent it. That's all coming up right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with a back-to-school edition of our program today. A little later in the program, we'll speak with several experts about how bullying can be prevented in Iowa schools and communities. But before that, how is digital technology revamping the way today's students learn? Joining us to begin with is someone who can tell us about the changes taking place this year in one Iowa school district. Craig Barnum is with us. He's the Director of Technology for College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. Welcome to our program, Craig.
Hi, Ben.
What's different this year with you?
It's a really different year for us and a really exciting year. In fact, just today we're rolling out, over the next couple of days, we're going to roll out about 1,000 computers to students in grades 9 through 12. Actually, when it's all said and done, we'll hit about 1,500 for the kids in those grades.
Mm-hmm. These are laptops, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Why the change? Why the big investment?
Well, you know, we didn't do it lightly. We studied this process for the better part of 2.5, almost 3 years, and really looked closely at it, tried to see what other folks were doing. And, you know, it was really for us a decision that we felt like to give the kids their best shot at learning in the way that's native to them. And to really make learning powerful, this was going to be a really a good investment for us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as I said, we looked around an awful lot before making this decision.
Craig, when you researched this for 2 or 3 years, as you say, and imagine you did that as a group, what were the chief concerns and questions you had going into this process?
Well, you know, I think the major concern we still have, in fact, is one that I think everybody shares who does this is that you know, if we go ahead and just deploy 1,500 notebook computers to students and things kind of go exactly the same way as they are in the classroom and the experience doesn't change for the teacher or the child, you know, we've really kind of squandered our resources there. And so the real challenge here is getting teachers, kids, and in fact the whole community to think differently about what education looks like. Because not only do teachers, we're hoping teachers will, in fact, at some point down the road here a little ways, teach a little differently with this, you know, take advantage of the capacity to personalize learning that these devices bring, which really we think makes it very powerful. You know, the kids have to also buy into that, and we think they will. You know, more important is equally as important to that is getting the community to buy into that because it'll look different than it currently does now.
How so personalize, you say? How does a laptop instead of a textbook personalize learning?
Well, you know, the way we're envisioning it, and I think there's probably lots of different ways for this to happen, but in our vision, we're talking about trying to create learning that's highly engaging for kids, and I don't mean that as an entertaining aspect, but in the way that it kind of unlocks or taps into their passions, because we really believe that that's the key to deep and significant learning. And so we're hoping that with these devices that our teachers can design experiences for kids where they can do that, where they can work on real-world problems, where they're not bounded by the four walls of the schoolhouse, but they can get outside of those and really work with real people, real content experts, solve real problems. And that's how we envision that process being personalized and hopefully more powerful for everybody involved.
Can you give me a concrete example in an area of study that would be most affected by having a laptop instead of a textbook?
Oh, well, you know, I think across the board, the content areas are the content areas like the humanities, for example. My old content was language arts or English, and I think that's it would look dramatically different in terms of, you know, how I would interact with kids if I was designing instruction with this. And, you know, examples of that would be, you know, we're a big Google Docs or Google Apps school. And one of the things I know I would do instantly would be to have the kids put their work there. It's a great collaborative tool. Many people can work on the same document. But as we did research and tried to gather information to do some of those analysis and sort of higher order skills to create rigorous projects, one of the things I would do concretely was would be to have them work with, you know, experts outside my classroom and have them give them direct feedback onto that document, which makes it really easy to do that. So, for example, if we were working on something along the lines of writing a persuasive paper or something, you know, I might have them talk to someone at the ACLU. If you're talking about something about, let's say, photo enforcement in Cedar Rapids. And, you know, maybe tap into someone from the ACLU to read their work and give them some critique on it right there. And then maybe the flip side would be have someone from law enforcement or city government do the same thing. You know, this sort of real-world application really makes it powerful. And, you know, those are the sorts of things that I could see really vastly changing how we do things.
So instead of perhaps writing a term paper on whatever, you make a multimedia application or some kind of presentation.
That's true, and I'm not even just ruling out just using straight old text, but it's the notion that your audience is so much more real and defined than it is just when you're writing for me or even your peers. And I think that's a powerful notion. So,
what's been the reaction from parents? I imagine not every parent in your school district can be on board. People worried about moving away from good, solid textbook learning and replacing it with flashy, high-tech bells and whistles.
You know, it's interesting. We have had some questions about our program and the way it's structured. But I have to be honest, we've had several information nights, and I've made my name available. And, you know, I haven't answered that question yet.
No.
You know, I think my notion is that I think our parents and community are really ready for this. I think they're very accepting of this idea and energized and excited about it. As you know, we made all of our parents and students sign off an acknowledgement form, which shows that they read and understood our policy, which is pretty comprehensive. And before we started our rollout just this week, in fact, last week, we had over 90% of those returned.
Craig Barnum was with the College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. The district, I understand, spent over $2 million for the hardware and software for these over 1,000 laptops to, in part, replace textbooks. What evidence is there? And you did say at the beginning of this conversation you'd be disappointed if it simply was a different way of achieving the same thing, if it was not better. What evidence is that this improves learning?
One of the things we're looking at is one of the model schools we looked at was High Tech High in San Diego. And they have a pretty interesting metric for how they measure the success of their institution. And one of the things they look at is how many of their kids not only graduate from their institution and not just enroll in a postgraduate program, but how many of them complete that program within 4 years. Their average is about 75 to 80% of their kids do that. And they're roughly our size and our demographic breakout. In fact, they may have a more challenging demographic set than we do. The state of Iowa average, and we're right in line with that, with those same statistics, according to the National Scholastic Clearinghouse, is somewhere around 30%. And so, you know, these are the sort of metrics we're looking at. I think it depends a lot about what your output and, you know, what your measurement metrics are going to be for this. For us, those are the things we're going to pay attention to. I don't expect that, you know, having a laptop in every kid's hands, even if we see the changes we hope to see over the next couple of years, that we're necessarily going to see a tremendous bump in standardized test scores. I think we'll see some, and I hope we do, but that's not why we're doing this. We're hopefully doing this to prepare kids in really significant ways, and I keep kind of using that word, but, you know, ways that really matter for their future.
Where did your district get the $2.2 million for the hardware and software?
We pulled those out of our physical plant levy and our 1 cent sales tax dollars, and kind of leveraged that over the next 3 years to afford this project. You know, we're a district that we're very fortunate. We're a growing district, and we do have some favorable land valuations around us, so those things do help out.
Mm-hmm. So tell us the future of the textbook. Is it on its way out? Because I know you will be using some textbooks still, correct, this year?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, phase
them out in the future?
You know, change is incremental, and so my sense is that's probably the way we're going. You know, although I have to be honest that I think the type of instruction I'm hoping that our teachers will design and deliver with these devices, you know, they probably won't use textbooks, whether they're digital or, you know, analog paper. I'm hoping that we get to a more, as I said earlier, more of a personalized type of instruction that's, you know, the other term we would use is mass customization. And I really hope that we get there, but, you know, that's a little ways off. So certainly we're not expecting textbooks to go anytime soon.
Are you worried at all? Because, you know, our 12 and 13-year-olds can run circles around us when it comes to technology. Are you worried at all or have any built-in safety that this won't be misused in any way and the kids will be in the classroom gaming, for instance, instead of studying?
Sure. You know, we do have some safeguards put in place for those sorts of things. We, you know, like every school in the country, we've got filtering software, and our filtering package does remove most of those sorts of issues for us. However, not all of them, and there will be a certain amount of that's possible to happen. It's certainly my hope that, again, it comes back to the solid, high quality instructional design that we really hope our teachers are working on. Will make this a device that's really used as a learning tool rather than as a, you know, more just an engagement or novelty tool.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
You know, that's really the way we're looking to approach that problem.
You know, the new smartphone that I got, Craig, can tell when I'm looking at the screen, and if I'm not looking at the screen, it turns into an energy saving mode. That would be interesting for a laptop in a classroom to make sure the kids are paying attention, wouldn't it? They can monitor who is looking at the screen and who isn't.
Yeah, you know, that would be an interesting thing. I think that would be equally interesting to run in professional learning for staff as well.
There you go. Okay. Craig Barnum, Director of Technology for College Community School District in Cedar Rapids. Thank you, Craig, for this conversation.
That was enjoyable. Thank you.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you've just joined us here on River to River, we're taking a look at how digital technology is revamping the way today's students learn. We're in the classroom this hour. Later in the hour, another school-related topic. We'll find out about steps to prevent bullying in Iowa's schools and communities. Right now, let's check in with Paul Gassman. He is the superintendent of Sioux City Schools. Paul, are you there with us?
I sure am.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for joining us this afternoon, and we do want to talk with you later about our second topic this hour, bullying. But for now, let's keep the focus on the digital revolution taking place in our classrooms. Tell us, what's been happening in Sioux City Schools?
Yeah, Sioux City is the fourth largest district in Iowa. We've got about 14,000 students, and we have done a couple of technological things that are similar to what my colleague there in college community talked about. In the last 3 years, we have rolled out what we refer to as the technology instructional suite for each classroom for the teachers to use with the students. Hardware that would be included in that technology suite would be things like a document camera, a projection system, an interactive whiteboard, and responder units for students. For those that don't know what responders are, that's where each student holds something that looks a little like a remote control, and teachers are able to discern from the entirety of the class what students know, understand, and are able to do by posing questions to them. It kind of gets us out of those days where I suspect when you and I were in school, there was always somebody that sat in front of the class and raised their hand at every question that was asked.
Right. Or on the other hand, Paul, people who sit in the classroom and have a question but are a little shy about asking it, they
exactly.
can register that they want to know something?
Yeah, or people like me that would have sat in the back of the room trying not to answer any question that was asked. And so it's something that really engages the entirety of the student population. We also have rolled out, as a part of an FCC grant, which was just wonderful, the largest one-to-one laptop-to-student initiative in the state of Iowa this year. We rolled out 4,500 new laptops to our high school students, all freshmen through seniors. It began with an FCC grant that helped us to pay for connectivity. One of the ways that we're a little different than my colleague from across the state there is that Sioux City is a district with a different demographic. We have 60% of our students on free or reduced lunch. We have one in five of our learners in this district, of our 14,000 students, does not speak English as their primary language. We have about 46 home languages spoken in our district. And so we first went after the one-to-one initiative with a connectivity component because we, in surveying our students, found that about half of them didn't have internet connectivity at home. And so the first devices we handed out to them were much like cell phones, if you will. They had 3G connectivity no matter where they were. And that was a wonderful tool to have, and we implemented that, and then over time, more of our students gained internet access at home as we continued to survey them. And so we've now moved into a situation where we've just broadened our own Wi-Fi capability within our school district, and certainly there are a lot of businesses and libraries around the community that also do that. And so we're using new laptop computers this year for the students, and it's really been a wonderful tool in our classroom for many of the same reasons that my colleague just shared with you. And our goal here is to reinvent instruction through the use of this this technology to meet the kids where they are.
Mm-hmm. Paul Gassman, hang on for a moment. I want to introduce one more guest before our half hour ends here. Lee Zeitz is Associate Professor and Coordinator of Instructional Technology Division at the University of Northern Iowa. She's in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Lee.
Hello there.
Oh, hello, sir. Sorry. You and I, of course, well known as a center for educating our teachers. What's your perspective on being at a center where we teach teachers on moving into the digital era?
Oh, it's essential. It's one of the things that we're trying to provide our instruction in ways that are student-centered, that fit into the requirements of a technologically oriented system like this. One-to-one is really not about the hardware or the technology or anything like that. It's about empowering students. It's giving them access to resources they didn't have before. Textbooks are nice, but they're just it's just a collection of information for a curriculum. But imagine if you could have the whole world and the resources and the interactive resources you can use to learn.
Mm-hmm. So tell us how teaching is not only more effective, but somehow more valuable, Lee?
Well, one of the things that makes learning valuable is being part of it. The whole idea of the student being in the center, challenging the student, the idea of trying to make sure the students are on task, and you know, I'm not going to let the students get on bring in computers because I'm concerned that they're going to be doing Facebook or something like that. The real key is that you need to make your learning and your educational experience exciting enough and challenging enough that the students see this as a tool, just one tool in a number, you know, a whole bag of tools that they'll have for learning.
Mm-hmm. Are there subjects that lend themselves well, adapt best to these digital platforms, and others that are sort of lagging?
Well, I think almost anything. I mean, if we're doing history, we can go out and we can look at authentic primary sources. If we're doing math, we can use it for calculations. But more importantly, we can go out and we can get actual census data and that sort of thing. I think, I mean, PE is something where the typical computer that you think of, you know, the laptop or something like that, usually isn't used much. But there's a lot of other types of technology, such as heart rate monitors and things like that are used.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, any place, I think that in all subjects, we have situations where students are trying, they need to go out and find information, bring it back in, synthesize it, and create new ideas.
You, I assume, would have an overview of schools in Iowa. Can you tell us, Lee, perhaps where Iowa is in this digital evolution in the classroom and perhaps compared to other states?
Actually, we're doing quite well. As far as the one-to-one initiatives, we have, 320-something school districts, and over a third of them have a one-to-one initiative going. You know, that's something that's crucial for us to understand because, you know, that's where our students are going to be going. Now, you have other places, you know, other there are some places such other states where it's working. They've been doing it for longer, but Iowa's doing quite well.
Mm-hmm. What about students with different types of disabilities, be they physical or other type of disabilities, perhaps a type of disorder in terms of attention deficit?
Well, if we talk about disabilities in the sense of someone's inability to read or to see things and that sort of stuff, obviously if we have things in a technological sense, we can do a terrific job of making it accessible to them. As far as attention disorder, I must admit I'm affected by that.
You are?
But, well, there's a squirrel. No, as far as attention disorder, I mean, the idea is that when a student is involved in doing things, I mean, you take a look at somebody who's ADD, the idea is that when they get into gaming, they will do that for hours. And the fact is that they're involved in it. It's something that they find useful, and they're rewarding from it. And I think that's the whole idea. And the work that Paul's going to be doing out there in Sioux City, you're going to be giving these opportunities to their students, and they should be highly engaged.
Paul Gassman in Sioux City, what has been the reaction from students, teachers, parents? What stands out for you?
You know, we've really done a lot of study of other districts doing one-to-ones to help our educators learn new ways to teach because of this. There's a study out there called Project Red, which is really a meta-analysis of districts across the nation that are doing a one-to-one initiative. And it really points out that, you know, there's a list of about 10 different instructional practices that can change and can be most effective in a one-to-one. So we're working our way through those with our staff, and our staff members are just fantastic, and they're willing to take on the challenge. The students absolutely love having the devices available to them, but I have personally witnessed students. I actually happen to be a father of a student in high school as well here in this district, and have personally witnessed students just being more engaged as a result of the technology. And you know, the goal is to get the students to create that knowledge. My colleague there was speaking of that, and to, you know, to meet them where they are today in the technological world and do that is very important to us. We have had, as you might imagine, some resistance from parents who maybe misunderstood at some point or another how open our aperture would be on our computers in terms of allowing students onto different kinds of sites and those sorts of things. And we've got a great security system and filter system available to us. Not that it's foolproof, but, you know, certainly the students have access to just about everything through their smartphones anyway. But we've got a pretty tight aperture that, you know, when the students are in school, we open that up a little bit when they're at home with their computers. But generally, the vast majority of our parents have been very supportive as well.
Superintendent of Sioux City Schools, Paul Gassman, please stay with us, Paul, for our second half hour. We're going to say goodbye to Lee Zeitz, Associate Professor and Coordinator of Instructional Technology Division at University of Northern Iowa. Lee, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate being here.
And when we come back, we remain in the classroom, so to speak. But we'll be talking about several experts about how bullying can be prevented in Iowa's schools and communities. Of course, the last few years, bullying a big topic. We'll have one of the experts talk, including a former victim of bullying himself. He now studies how to prevent it. Have you or one of your children been the victim of bullying? Have you ever been a bully? Tell us about your experience and your thoughts on how to prevent it in this next half hour. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at Iowa Public Radio. Back in just a few minutes. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, as Iowa students careen back into classrooms, we've been going back to school as well to find out about increasing use of digital technology instead of textbooks that we had in our first half hour. This half hour, a different focus, still in the classroom. We want to look at bullying in our classrooms and our communities and what we know about how to prevent it. Still with us from the first half hour, Paul Gassman. He is the superintendent of Sioux City Schools. Paul, you're still there?
I still am, thank you.
Now, last year, your district participated in the major national documentary, Bully. It came out last year. The acclaimed film reveals the often devastating effects of bullying in schools and tells the story of several children across the country who were bullied, including Alex, a boy at a middle school in Sioux City in your district. Let's listen to a short clip from that film featuring Alex.
I feel kind of nervous going back to school because I have trouble with making friends. People would think that I'm not normal.
It's harder whenever there's a bigger group. Pretty much a good day for me would be people leaving their hands off of me.
They punch me in the jaw, they strangle me, they knock things out of my hand, sit on me. I feel like I belong somewhere else.
From the documentary Bully featuring Alex, at one time going to a middle school in Sioux City. And listeners, have you or one of your children been the victim of bullying? Have you ever perhaps been a bully? Tell us about your experience this half hour, your thoughts on how to prevent it. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook, of course, as well. A heartbreaking documentary, Paul, with a lot of repercussions for the country. A great film that got made that brought awareness to this topic. What action has happened in the Sioux City School District in the meantime?
Well, first I'd like to say that I'm really proud of our board for taking this subject on. You know, when documentary filmmakers come in and say, you know, we'd like to take a look at your district and see if we can find a challenging situation, we knew full well that they likely would find what I'll label some of our dirty laundry, and they did, and we failed a student as a part of what you'll see if you've had the opportunity to watch that documentary. They also were in our district because we've had a 12-year partnership with the Waite Institute for Violence Prevention. The Waite Foundation was created by Ted Waite, who was once the owner of Gateway Computers, and he graduated from our schools here. And the Waite family has participated with us in developing and implementing curriculum in our schools to prevent bullying. I so appreciate that you have consistently talked about preventing bullying as you've talked about this segment of the show, because that's what we really believe here, is that we have to prevent it. We can't simply look at ways to react when bullying occurs. But as a result of participating in this documentary, we've taken a lot of challenge. I would agree. We have had people that have referred to us as courageous, but we've had a lot of people refer to us as sharing their frustration with us of what mm-hmm. they've witnessed there. We've implemented changes specifically in the situations related to Alex, that great student who had such a challenge. As an example, some of what you'll see in the video or the documentary is on a school bus. And today, I'm pleased to say that we've got high-quality audio and video systems with multiple cameras, multiple microphones on every bus, and they're digital. We can reclaim the footage at any point in time. And as a means of prevention, we pay staff members to watch the videos every day to look for any challenges that might be there on our school buses, because the buses are a notorious place for bullying in any district, because there's the adult or adults that are on the bus really have their hands full with driving the vehicle as well.
How successful have you been in actually changing the climate among students? Because that has to be a key.
It is the key, and our goal was to actually reach beyond that and to change the climate of our community. You know, bullying is not specific to schools. It's just that schools have so many people in them, obviously, that you know, it's all the way through. But this really is a community challenge. You'll find bullying in churches, in shopping malls, at sporting events. You know, it's something that's pervasive in our society, and it's magnified in schools, no doubt. And our students have really responded strongly, and I'm really pleased to say that we've got a couple of different community groups that have sprouted up to support the schools and to help us educate the entirety of the community about what they can do. How do they get information to the school district in the proper way, so that we can work together as a team to reduce and you know prevent bullying. You know, I have to be honest and say I don't know that we'll eradicate bullying forever. It's kind of like saying you want world peace, but we do want to make a difference in this community. In order to do that, we're going to need community members helping us.
Would you rule out that someone could have a young person could have a similar experience to Alex in the Sioux City School District now?
Well, I think that's possible in any district now, and so we're certainly included in that. I certainly don't, you know, I feel that no student should have to go through any kind of a challenging situation like that, and so we want to make certain that if it does arise, that we've got the tools that have been well communicated to the students in the community about how they can reach out and inform us, and we can take appropriate action as soon as possible. Research would indicate that students very rarely share, less than half the time, share the challenges that occur. And if we can get to them at the lowest possible level, then we can hopefully keep it from growing to a much more severe level.
Paul Gassman is superintendent of Sioux City Schools with us this half hour to focus on bullying in schools and in the community. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Craig is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Craig. What's your experience with bullying?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. But I was bullied back in middle school. I'm almost graduated from college. But I tried to get teachers and other adults notified about the problems I was having. And it was basically to no avail. They kind of said, well, that's just him. That's, you know, his personality. So you can't do anything about it. So I ended up actually starting a fight with the kid. I won and was never bullied again. And I'm obviously not advocating doing that, but I was wondering if the caller, the guest, had any ways that, you know, the student or the individual themselves could take matters in their own hands and fix it. Obviously not a violent mean. You can't always do that, but something they can do just by themselves without needing adults.
How someone being bullied can react, you're right, Craig, because we have a, I'll just call it a Hollywood notion of reacting to bullying, and maybe a father figure stands up and says, you got to strike back. That's the only way you're going to stop the bullies. And then sounds like that's what went on with Craig. Probably not the ideal way to go, huh, Paul?
Yeah, that's certainly not something that I would advocate for either. You know, we've got kind of a three-tiered process that we're doing here. We've got curriculum that's titled Second Step that's in our district for all students that are in kindergarten through eighth grade, where they learn about relationships and positive relationships and the climate and the culture. There are some parent components to that, so that cards are mailed home to parents so that they can help reinforce what's taught here in the schools. You know, interestingly, the school where the documentary featured a student had not fully implemented that curriculum yet, and now they have, and I'd like to think that it's better, but I wouldn't. I think it would be naive to say that it's completely gone. We have a second piece of that, which is called Mentors in Violence Prevention, and in that case, we have our senior students in our high schools working with freshmen and sophomore students about items related to bullying and relationships again in schools and how to respond appropriately when they see something. You know, we've all been at one point or another, if we're all going to be honest, we've all been at some point or another in our life the victim of bullying. We've all been a bystander to bullying. And I would dare say almost all of us, if not all of us, have been bullies at one point or another. You know, and schools are where we learn how to interrelate to one another, and the way we learn is by failing. And so, you know, we learn to walk by falling down. We learn to interrelate by making a few mistakes in there. But we don't want to create a situation where you know it gets so severe for the students, like in the caller's case. Our third tier for us is a program called Coaching Boys into Men, which really works in our athletic programs, and particularly the male athletic programs. Why is it okay, as an example, for students to be asked to be aggressive on the football field, just as an example, yet that might not be okay to be aggressive in that same manner in relationships and those sorts of things?
Paul, we have a couple other guests we'd like to get on this half hour. Fascinating what you're telling us, Paul Gassman, superintendent of Sioux City Schools. Craig, thank you for that call from Des Moines. Let's also talk to Chris Hall. Not now. He's a state representative in District 2. He's a Democrat. Chris, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi. You represent actually the Sioux City area, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, welcome to our program. Earlier this year, I understand you drafted and introduced legislation that has to do with bullying. What would the bill do?
Well, the bill is really seeking to engage parents earlier in the process. I think, of course, this is a great venue for the discussion to advance, and what my bill specifically tries to do is, if there's a situation in which school authorities or educators have acknowledged or are aware of bullying, it really seeks to engage the parents of the children at an earlier stage and put it into a mediation process.
Mm. Okay, so the parents are aware of it, and it would, if they don't act, if they don't try some corrections to the behavior, there are penalties?
Correct, and I think that there's an important distinction between we're not looking to punish parents. We're really seeking to engage them, and if they are not interested in being engaged in the process or if they operate outside of, you know, good faith efforts, I think that there is some importance in trying to hold them accountable or at least make sure that students are aware that there is great gravity to their actions and consequences of their actions. I think that it's something that has been proven to be effective in our state's truancy policy, mm-hmm. and this is a bill that really kind of seeks to emulate that.
What would be the examples of specific penalties meant to encourage parents to mediate, to engage on a problem?
Well, if once a mediation agreement has been reached, once there is something that has been reduced to writing, some agreement between the parents and school authorities, and kind of a plan of action to try and ensure that the students understand this is not something that continues. Once that has been established, if there is a lapse in the effort of trying to follow the mediation or course of action, or if the parents kind of disengage from the process, the opportunity to kind of see some discretion from the county attorney's office steps in. Mm-hmm. And the county attorney can, of course, using their own judgment, figure out whether the parents have been engaged or whether it's something that maybe needs to be further reiterated at home with the child.
Okay, to move along before our hour gets away from us, does this enjoy bipartisan support?
Yes. Thus far, I've, of course, circulated the bill around, and I've received very positive comments from policymakers on both sides of the aisle. I've also spoken to anti-bullying coalition groups here in Sioux City, and I think that parents are interested in seeing some further action or course that would actually have defined consequences for when the right things are not followed. And I think that lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have encouraged me to file the bill again, and hopefully it can serve as a venue for further discussion.
And quickly, the outlook for this legislation as you see it in the new session in 2013?
I think there's certainly potential for it. Of course, I don't know that the bill's perfect, but I hope that there's an opportunity to perfect it with the input of others and people on all sides of the issue. And I think that there's probably strong potential for it to advance.
Okay, Chris Hall, State Representative, stay with us. One more to step into our ring to have a conversation about bullying today. He's been on our program talking about it before. Warren Blumenfeld is an associate professor at Iowa State University in the School of Education there. Hi, Warren.
Hi.
Great to have you back on the program. You yourself were, as a child, a victim of bullying. Can you tell us where you grew up and the nature of that?
I grew up both in New York City and in Los Angeles in the 1950s and 1960s, and I was a constant target of bullying because I did not perform or express my gender the way that a young male was supposed to perform or enact his gender. So I was continually bullied, and it was really kind of concerning that Alex in the movie Bullying still suffers the same types of things in this century that I suffered in the 1950s, 1960s.
You have studied the effects for decades of bullying, not only in the classroom, but also online incivility in teens. Would you say mm-hmm. that we have come also, in part thanks to this documentary film, Bully, to a point, a turning point in raising awareness, in addressing this problem in schools?
To an extent, yes. And I really appreciate Paul Gossman also going into the community and looking at the ways that bullying continues in their communities. But I would like to enlarge the conversation to talk about the larger society, that I don't believe that bullying itself is a youth problem simply. I think in many ways it reproduces what we see in the larger society. Young people learn who not to like. Young people learn from their elders and from the society at large who should be the target of their bullying. So whenever we show people in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, protesting a Muslim interfaith community center, it gives them the message that it's okay to bully Muslims. The same thing when the same thing was happening in New York City. Now we hear that Mormonism is a cult. So basically, they get the impression it's okay to bully Mormons. When we live in a country that is trying to pass a constitutional amendment against marriage equality for same-sex couples, it gives young people the permission that if you're gay or lesbian, or if your parents are gay or lesbian, then it's okay to bully them. The Boy Scouts just reiterated their policy, excluding gay or bisexual scouts or scout leaders. So endlessly, we're giving messages by the larger society who it's okay to scapegoat, who it's okay to stereotype. We have a English as the official language in Iowa. And we really don't need a law or a mandate like that. We know that in order to make it in the United States, you have to learn English. But that was really passed in order to basically marginalize people who English is not their first language. So basically, it gives young people the message that if you can't speak English fluently, then it's okay to bully those people as well.
Warren Blumenfeld, you've said we have to look at the wider circle, the wider society, not just at our schools. So in the research that you've done, tell us in the few minutes that we have remaining, what are the things we have learned about changing it in our communities and in our schools, about making our environments less hostile and less open to bullying?
One of the things that we really see as very effective in the schools is turning what we call the bystanders into upstanders, that we to empower the youth, the leaders, and all of the students to step in and say that bullying is not appropriate. Many times students want to interrupt a bullying incident by stepping in, talking about how it's not appropriate. But they haven't been given the skills. So a lot of the things we're doing right now is empowering the youth leaders to create a safer, more welcoming climate and giving the norm that bullying will not be accepted at our school.
How do you do that as a bystander without potentially drawing the sights of the bully to you and being the subject of ridicule yourself and not getting any support?
Mm-hmm. It's called social norming theory. There's a whole process that we go through in order to create a climate that bullying is not tolerated. And we do trainings for the students. We do faculty and staff trainings on a continuing long-term basis. I mean, many times we discuss this when we see a bully side in the media, when someone has killed themselves because of being bullied. We really need to have this on a long-term, continuing basis, so that we can stop all of these bully sides, but also bringing in parents, talking at the PTA meetings. So this needs to be a holistic approach in the classroom with all staff, with all students, and also needs to be a curricular infusion. In English classes, having novels that talk about bullying so that students can develop empathy for the targets of the bullying situations.
We have only a minute left, but can you address online bullying, cyber bullying, mm-hmm. how that's different than person-to-person?
Well, what we see in cyberbullying is that face-to-face bullying kind of peaks around the middle school years, but cyberbullying continues to advance in the high school years as well. And now with more and more means of the electronic means of communication, and also the anonymity of cyberspace, you can really bully many people at one time, and there is no safe place. Before, those who are bullied can go home and have the safety of their own bedrooms or whatever. Now bullying comes right into the home. And unless you shut off the electronic equipment, which closes a window to the world, that you cannot escape it. So we're seeing a whole different, or not in some ways, a different type of bullying in the sense that it could be perpetrated anywhere.
Warren Blumenfeld, thank you very much for joining us. Iowa State University School of Education, thank you for returning to our program.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to Chris Hall, State Representative, and also with us for the entire hour. Paul Gassman, thank you for joining us, Superintendent of Sioux City Schools.
Thank you.
And River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Catherine Perkins, and Alex Hoyer. Technical support from Jeff Schmidt, Jeff Schmidt is the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows. Help today from Garrett Van Leeuwen in Ames. Also from Cedar Falls, we had help from Tony Daner. The podcasting and on-demand audio of this program or any of our previous programs available at iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.